Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mona Montgomery with the Hola Hoax. I'm sure you knew by now there were no gas chambers in Germany. Hitler didn't intend to kill any Jews. He just wanted to get them out of Germany, and 6 million did not die. All of history of the Second World War has been written by the communists because the communists won. We made a mistake in fighting on the side of the communists, and we set our country up to become part of the puzzle of worldwide communism, which is now taking over us and the world, in the form of the Patriot Acts 1 and 2, the encouragement of our borders being overrun by criminal, illegal, uneducable aliens, and an attack on the nuclear family and on God. Tonight we're going to discuss the renaissance in Germany that's taking place now as German youth start questioning the hate speech laws that prevent them from discussing the matters we're discussing tonight. We'll be discussing how to lower the birth rate, overpopulation, the fact that Arabians have the right to Arabia, not Jews, and the threat of communism today. I hope you enjoy the show. I don't think you can have Nazism without racism, because racism is just another word for awareness of genetics. And Nazis were intelligent and educated. They would never have a society where you weren't allowed to study a science because it was politically incorrect. That just couldn't happen in Nazi Germany. They were at the top of the scientific field. Their scientists were the best scientists worldwide. And it was because of the vast superiority of the German scientific community that the Jews, in their folly, produced this fraud Einstein, which the story of Einstein is astonishingly amusing. Einstein was a very third-rate intellect. He couldn't get through engineering school. He really was a dummy. But he was a Jew, and he was placed in a patent office in Bern, Switzerland. A patent office as a fourth-level clerk. Well, what do you think a Jew is going to do in a patent office? He's going to steal patents. That's what he did. That's what Einstein did. He stole. Yes, you can study Einstein all you want, but you really need to study the FBI files on Einstein to get the real picture of this communist. He was simply a communist who was placed in the patent office to steal the patents of the brilliant German scientists. And he did. He stole four of them. And everybody was so astonished that this genius was able to produce four important patents without having any connection to the scientific community. Never dreaming, of course, that he had stolen them, because Germans didn't steal. And it was beyond their imagination that a fourth-level clerk would steal. They wouldn't do it. They just couldn't imagine such a thing. So they believed the story when he came out of the patent office. And, of course, he himself didn't promote himself, because they would have seen through him right away. The Jewish community promoted Einstein, and they promoted him as an idiot savant. You know, he couldn't tie his shoes. They liked to make a great deal out of the fact that he couldn't talk normally to mere mortals because he was such an airy-fairy genius to end all geniuses. So they got this guy, this French guy named Henri Poincaré, who really was a genius and wrote something about ad hoc reasoning as opposed to post hoc reasoning. I had to read that when I was studying under Edward Teller at the University of Berkeley. And, I mean, Henri Poincaré was a true genius. And he ran around with Einstein, and he'd feed Einstein the answers, or better yet, he'd come out to the public and say, well, Einstein can't talk to you, you filthy, disgusting mortals, because he is nearly a godlike creature, and you have to talk to me. And then Henri Poincaré would give people the answers, while Einstein would take the credit for it. So once they established that Einstein, a Jew, was by far the most brilliant genius ever produced by mankind, then they used him as a mouthpiece to espouse communist propaganda, like the famous line of Einstein, There is only one race, the human race. Yeah, well, you know, the Jews have no race. They're a mongrel race. The communists hate the three great races. They want to destroy all three great races. So they're one of the planks of the communist regime is that there shall be no races. And they used Einstein to promote that all over the place. The Jews have had 60 years to control the media and explain the history from their point of view. It's time to hear the Nazi side. It's time to learn that the Nuremberg trials were communist show trials, that the confessions of steam chambers, gas chambers, electrical chambers were coerced through confessions. You need to understand your history. You need to know that Joe McCarthy was right. America has been taken over by communists. They do infiltrate our media, our movie industry, and they do tell us how to think. And you, when you look at the media, you look at MTV, you will see white women constantly being paired off with blacks because the Jews want the white race to be exterminated. And they know the very best way to exterminate a race with recessive genes, which is what the white race is to encourage it to race mix. That way the children will not bear the recessive characteristics of their white parents. It's extermination through breeding. And, you know, there are things you need to know. You need to understand biology and genetics. You need to hear from someone besides the Jew. The question is there room in a person's psychology to extol the virtues of civilization? Because this is about having a sense of wonder for art and music and architecture and sculpture. This is not about a political program. This is about the wonders of Western civilization. You have to have a certain soul, a certain ability to get excited about music and poetry and literature. Shakespeare, for instance, has moved millions of people for hundreds of years and is now being taken out of the school system. Well, because he's considered too white. Well, what is that if that's not racism? And if you don't like hearing the white race extolled because you don't reverberate to the wonders of civilization, that's fine. But let the rest of us have what makes us happy. If you want to have noise with your dinner and castanets and boom boxes, that's okay. But let white people have their dinner quietly so they can converse with each other on an intellectual level. If you want to look at the relationship between the sexes as rutting and putting genitals in your mouth because you can handle the most disgusting thing and call it beautiful because you're a mind over matter kind of guy, do it. Have 100. But let us fall in love. Let us talk to each other like human beings and have sexual relations in the confines of marriage so there's that meaning and depth. And let us have our relationships. The whites are not trying to stop the non-whites from being non-white. We just want the non-whites to let us be white. If anyone wants to examine Hitler's soul, you don't need to be a psychoanalyst. All you need to do is look at his artwork. You can't lie when you're doing artwork. And I have a pretty good collection of his artwork at my website, which is www.monamontgomery.com. You can either look at it in a flip book style, or you can run through the gallery and listen to my discussion on him as an artist. And I think I'm qualified to do that because my husband was also a German artist and was of some repute. And I, living with this man that was my husband, I learned a lot about art. And I learned that you can't fake genius. When it comes to art, it's there to be seen. And there's just no way you can deal with Hitler after you've looked at his massive product of artwork. Now, one of the ways you judge the genius of an artist is how much art he produces. And I believe, I mean, I haven't been able to check it out, but I have heard that Hitler produced thousands of works of art, paintings. I have at least 100 on my website. He was a very prolific and very excellent artist. He likes working in landscapes, and he likes working in architecture, so you see a lot of cityscapes done by Hitler. He's not so hot with the nude models, although he has several, and portraits, but he's absolutely excellent in both landscapes and architectural scapes. He did beautiful pictures of German architecture, you know, street scenes. But let me tell you, the reason he didn't make it in art school, and he was kicked out of art school, was because the Jew-controlled artistic community at that time was starting to go modern, and they wanted you to tear your subjects up and put a leg here and an arm here and an eye over here, and Hitler refused to do it. He would not do what the modern art teachers wanted him to do to, quote, free up his soul. He liked being uptight. He liked being disciplined. And the works he produced are absolutely exquisite. Just look at them at my website, www.monamontgomery.com. His people were a little inferior, but his landscapes and his cityscapes are beyond, they're not surpassed as far as I'm concerned. There is no line when it comes to an intellectual debate. The truth is to be talked about. And what's so important about the study of genetics and race is that you learn that the higher races have recessive genes. That means that mongrelizing is a bad thing, because the product is a lower, it tends toward the lower race. The more dominant genes are the genes of the more bestial types. So you want the lower races to evolve, of course, but not at the expense of the higher races. You want that creativity to develop and evolve. It will not evolve as long as you continue to encourage race mixing, because there's only a 1 in 8 chance of the higher race to find its way into the children. And that's not a level playing field, and it's not smart. Now, it's not true also what we've been told. This is one of the mantras of the communists, that we are all one race, we are all one human race. And they prove it by saying, you have to be of the same species in order to reproduce. And since whites can marry blacks and can reproduce, therefore they must be of the same species. But that's simply not true. We know that Neanderthal mated with Homo sapien. We know that Homo erectus, that silly creature with the long arms and the almost dog-like flat brain, mated with Neanderthal. So these are separate species who did race mix, and yet we're told that if whites are marrying blacks, because they're producing children, therefore they must be the same race. That's a lie. You can mix. You can produce children by going outside of your species. We know that because all of us have at least one, I think it's 1.4% Neanderthal blood. So what has happened in the past 7 million years as one hominid displaces another and evolves and grows into a better model is that the newer model kills off the older model, and in the process there's a little bit of race mixing. That's evolution in progress. Now, we're at the point where we have to decide what to do about this massive number of blacks who are cannibals, who rape their children, who have 8 times the testosterone as the whites, 20% less brains, what are we going to do with them? We don't want to exterminate them because we've gone past the idea of genocide. We don't want to do that. We want to preserve all of the races just out of an artistic choice to show respect. Just like we like the turtle because the turtle is the oldest living creature, animal, on the face of the earth. It's been here for millions of years. It hasn't changed. And we love the turtle for that quality. We really do. He's a very respectable being. Similarly, we don't want to exterminate the blacks, but we do have to recognize that they are a more primitive being, and we have to accommodate for that. Not beat them, not harm them. That's outrageous and horrible. But we do have to treat them differently, give them different teachings, probably slower teachings. But if we do allow them to go at their own rate, they go to a very high level. They just take longer to do it. But if we put whites and blacks in the same schoolroom, everybody gets demoralized. The whites get bored, the blacks get frustrated. It has to stop. We have to separate the races and treat the races with respect as God intended us to do it. God created the races, and the races should survive. It's profitable for a short term to rape and murder and steal, but in the long run, it doesn't work because the people around you see you behaving like a psychopathic serial killer and they put you in jail. That's how I view the Jewish race, which is not a race at all. It's some kind of a bond of people who have all decided to ride the gravy train of Judaism until people notice what they're doing, and then the world will turn on the Jews for the 91st time and drive them out of society. Because these are people who are not a race at all, but who have this, there's a word for it I can't think of, when you have a kind of a phony idea that you're able to promote to people. It's sort of a con game. These gas chambers never existed. Hitler was not the devil. Saddam Hussein was not the devil. But they're very good at conning people. And it's an art, I guess. But I don't think it has a real survival value. I think people catch up with you eventually and they put you down. So no, the Jews are not a superior race. They are presently enjoying the fruits of their criminality. But that will last only as long as it takes people to recognize that they're doing it again, and they'll drive them out again. That's what is so odd about the Jew. Unlike every other race, the Jew does not seem to evolve. They don't learn and go on to become more and more human, probably because they are not a race at all. They're more of a niche or a class. They're a criminal class of human beings that goes from society to society. And they don't, as I said, they have no real genetic cohesiveness. They're just an oddity. One generation's Jew doesn't produce the next generation's Jew. It's a class of people, a type of people who go into a country and without any loyalty to that country, they look around and say, how can we rape, pillage, and murder? And it's just a psychopathic lifestyle that has no survival value in the long run. But you have to admit, serial killers have more fun. If you're into killing people, you're going to love being a serial killer. So I guess we should all envy the serial killer. But I don't, because it's not the way I want to live. Well, I was just going to say that the birth of a planet is a very interesting thing. It starts with a sun, of which there are millions, and then the chemicals, they condense, sort of, and the heavier chemicals go out farther away from the sun, and then the lighter chemicals go faster around the center of the sun. And when you get to the point of the kind of stuff that the Earth is made of, it travels around the sun at just about the right distance to create the conditions for life, with just the right amount of water and just the right amount of dirt to create waterfalls and beaches and all that good stuff. And then on these planets grow life forms, starting with cell life and developing into more complex life forms. And then you get your people, and then you get your smart people, and at some point you have to stop and look at what's happening. And there we are at that point. And what we are noticing is that too many people is going to wipe out all of the other life forms and destroy the ecosystems and wipe out the plant life as well as the animal life. So it's time to slow down the birth rate. We really have to do that. We're doubling at the rate of every 30 years. In the time of Christ, it took 1,000 years to double. We're at the top of the J curve. We have to use our massive brains to control our massive sex drives. And then, once we do that, we'll be okay. There's nothing wrong with having a very high standard of living. Everyone can have a car, a house, a yacht, plenty of education, all kinds of fun, just as long as there aren't too many of us here to do it. That's the only problem. We don't have to cut back on our lifestyle. We just have to cut back on our numbers. Then it won't be so bad. The oil companies won't be killing all of the lakes and ponds because there won't be enough people buying their products. It'll just be a nice little niche that the human race will fill, its proper niche, which has to be analyzed. We have to decide how many human beings can this planet comfortably support. And once we make that decision, we have to limit our numbers through birth control, because nothing else works. Nothing else works. Wars don't work. Murder doesn't work. Genocide doesn't work. It's nice, too, because those are very barbaric, horrible ideas anyway. Aren't you glad that murder doesn't work and war doesn't work? Aren't you happy that genocide isn't the answer? The answer is birth control. It's very, very simple. If you cut off the supply, you're going to cut off the future generations of that little fetus, and you actually will save future generations, not just the one that you eliminate or prevent, but the hundreds that it's going to give birth to in the future. So birth control is absolutely the answer. I'm sorry that RU486 is privately owned, because I would definitely be investing in it, but the second best is to go with Johnson & Johnson, because they recently bought up Alza, which was at the forefront of birth control technology, where you implant something near the uterus of the woman and it sends off time-release estrogen and prevents birth that way, instead of flushing the whole system with this somewhat dangerous chemical. So we are there. We could have it. But we don't want to use it because we're controlled, one, by communists who like the idea of chaos and overpopulation and the horrors that it produces, so that they can control an angry mob that needs control. You know, if you have everybody living peacefully with enough to eat and enough toys to play with, there's not going to be any wars. So the last thing the communists want is for birth control to take hold. They want to keep people confused and terrorized and keep men having to take care of more children than they can comfortably support, which makes the man's life a complete exercise in anxiety. It's all nuts. We have to give up all of this nonsense about producing more and more children, and we have to decide exactly how many children we can afford and produce those children. The Muslims don't understand freedom of religion because they believe that the government should reflect the religion of Islam. And I think that's perfectly fine, as long as they do that in Arabia. Who's to say which is better? A government that separates church and state like we do, and I'm glad we do, or a government that doesn't? After all, in our country, the United States of America, we've let in so many people through this new experimental theory of tolerating the intolerable that we're no longer allowed to be what we are, white Christians. White Christians designed this country to create civil rights that had never been allowed the common people before, the right to speak freely instead of keep your mouth shut, which is what slaves have to do, the right to worship their own god without being told by the king which god should be worshipped. And while I think that's fine, as long as you have an educated, ethical mass of people, which is what the Founding Fathers told us, that will work. But when, as in Arabia, you have people who have no education, who have no ethics, who are basically living on the level of animals, how do we know that it might not be better to allow them to live as they've been living for 7,000 years, under the dictatorship of a king? Even in the Western civilization, we've only gotten rid of the concept of kings in the last 100 years. Hitler took over after the king, after the chancellor who came in after the king. Kings are still being used in England. I say there's nothing wrong with Muslims being Muslims, as long as they do it in Arabia. The Western nations should not allow immigration from those parts of the world where civilization, as is conceived by the Founding Fathers and by Western people, is not understood. You see, these civilizations are different. You should not let people with an Eastern orientation invade the civilizations with a Western orientation. Let the Muslims be Muslims, but let them stay in Arabia. I never called anybody an ape because they were black. If I call someone an ape, it's because I catch them aping the mannerisms of other people in an insincere way. Now, a person named Limich claims and slanders me by saying I called her an ape because she is black. Untrue. I think I recall the incident she's talking about, which is that someone was explaining the truth about the difference in the races, the physiological difference in the races, including the fact that the white race has a frontal lobe 20% larger than the black race. And she got on the mic and said that that was wrong to say, that that was rude, even though it's true, because after all, some black people are smarter than some white people. But that is the argument that the black people always use because they don't seem to have the capacity to understand probabilities and statistics. If, statistically speaking, the great majority of blacks have frontal lobes 20% smaller than the great majority of whites, then it's irrelevant if a few blacks have intelligence higher than a few whites. Only an idiot who has no capacity to understand probabilities and statistics would bring up that argument. And as I recall, I think that's the argument she brought up, the typical argument of the Negro, which is, what difference does it make if the great majority of blacks have IQs 20% lower than whites and frontal lobes, that's the front part of your brain, 20% smaller than whites, and a cranium twice as thick as whites, if a few blacks are smarter than a few whites? And I said, and I will say again, that we aren't talking about specifics, we're talking about generalities. My position is still correct. Generally speaking, the great majority of whites are 20% smarter than the great majority of blacks. She then rebutted with some kind of an outrageous argument, and I don't recall it what it was, but I think I did say she was acting like an ape because she was acting like an ape. And she's never understood and still doesn't understand how stupid it is to bring up specifics in order to argue against generalities. And so she says that I called her an ape because she's a black person. Not so. I wouldn't call an intelligent black person an ape. I would only call a stupid black person an ape. When a white person talks about the impressive raised frontal lobes on the brains of the white man and try to show how that corresponds to the beautiful civilization that the white man built, including castles, churches, and museums, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, Shakespeare, Da Vinci, and Michelangelo, the black person gets up and says, "Oh my God, a racist. That person needs to go on medication. What trailer park did that person come from?" But the black person never, or the mongrel, never addresses the issue, which is whether or not Western civilization should survive, and whether or not the white Christian should survive. Right now, Western civilization is under attack from all over the world, from people like the mixed races and the black people who don't want to be disciplined and spend their lives classifying everything neatly in small drawers like white people do. They want to groove and be hip and, you know, go with the flow. They don't like the demands of Western civilization, and they're attacking Western civilization right now. I'm standing up for Western civilization. I'm saying it's a beautiful thing. It should be preserved. In fact, it should be furthered. And in order to do that, the white man has to be allowed to live. There's a huge influence coming from all sides against the white man to exterminate the white man through interbreeding, interracial breeding, which, because of the recessive quality of the white genes, exterminates and destroys the white man's line forever. A line, a pedigree that goes back 800,000 years, can be destroyed in one interracial marriage. So you now know why MTV always shows a white girl with a black man. They want to exterminate the white man. This professor from Harvard, I forgot his name right now, Ignatieff, Professor Ignatieff has said that the white race should be exterminated and that no one would miss the white man except a few white supremacist extremists. Well, I'm not a white supremacist extremist, but I think the white man should not be exterminated. After all, it's against all of the protocols of the United Nations, which says that genocide is a crime. And yet with impunity, people seem to feel that that doesn't count when it comes to white people, because white people are such a drag. And in fact, white people are a drag. They work hard. They don't have much sex. They like getting up and cleaning house in the morning and counting all of their inventory in the afternoon and at night. They don't even jump into bed and rut like the Negroes. They actually talk to each other at dinner. Or better yet, they might not even talk. They just sit there quietly and enjoy each other's company as they eat in silence. How would anybody want to be a member of a race like that except the white man? Nevertheless, I think the white man should be allowed to live. I think that Arafat is a great leader. I think he gives the Palestinians hope. I think the Palestinians need to resist and fight back now that they've been driven out of the Israeli side of the partition plan at the rate of 700,000 in direct violation of the partition plan. Most people don't know the history of Palestine and Israel because it's been kept secret on the American media. But it's a very important thing to know that when the United Nations created Israel, they divided it up approximately 50-50 between Israel and the Palestinians, known as the Arabs. They called it the Arab side and the Israeli side. At that time, there were virtually no Jews living in the area. They were all Palestinians or Arabs. So Israel, David Ben-Gurion was not allowed to even consider moving into Israel or even having Israel created unless he agreed to allow the Palestinians who lived on the Israeli side to continue living in their homes where they'd lived for hundreds, maybe thousands of years. You know, the Jews had been kicked out of the area by the Romans in 70 AD. And in 1900, only 1% Jews were in that area. They really have no historical claim to the land at all. The Palestinians have been there forever. So the deal was, according to the United Nations, here, David Ben-Gurion, you can have this for your country because we feel so sorry for you because of the gas chambers. But you can't kick out the Palestinians. You have to let them continue living on your side of the partition plan and leave them completely alone on their own side. And David Ben-Gurion agreed to it, but he wrote in private correspondence to his son that he had no intention of living up to the agreement. He was going to create a powerful army and completely destroy the Arabians, the Palestinians, and take over as much of the Middle East as he could. So the whole state of Israel was predicated on fraud, and for that reason, America wanted to rescind Israel back in 1940, in the 40s and 50s, because they immediately, when they landed, when they set foot on Israel, the Jews started using torture and rape and murder to drive 700,000 Palestinians off the Israeli side of the partition plan in direct violation of the agreement. Then, not satisfied with taking over the Israeli side completely, they declared war on the Arabs, or the Arabs declared war on them in retaliation for this expulsion of these 700,000, and the Jews moved over and took over 50% of the Palestinian side of the partition plan. So now they had three-fourths of the land all to themselves, which they were supposed to be sharing. Now they're going around bulldozing people's little shops and houses, and then they flatten the land and they put up a high-rise, and they euphemize it by calling it a settlement. They make it sound to the world over the media that they're just setting up tents or something. No, they're building high-rises on land that does not belong to them, which they have stolen, which they have invaded, are occupying. They call it settling. And what else are the Palestinians to do but to try to make them go home through the use of force? You have a situation where you've got burglars in your home. You turn around to your mantle, you pull the gun off the mantle, and you shoot the burglars until they leave your home. That's all that's going on. And you're being completely lied to when you say that this is Israel. Israel is way over, miles over there on the other side. Now these guys have moved into Palestine, and they're taking over Palestine. It's clearly a case of burglary. Furthermore, the Israelis have 400 nuclear bombs that they illegally manufactured using American money. That's why JFK told them 3 months before he was assassinated that he was coming in and he was going to take their weapons. They have no right to those weapons. The poor little Palestinians have nothing except sticks and stones. Why do you think the United Nations has signed 31 resolutions that would allow peacekeepers to go in there and put an end to the atrocities against the Palestinians by the Israelis? And the only reason that they haven't done so is because we, the United States of America, have vetoed those resolutions that have been signed by every other signatory in the Security Council. No, you're not understanding the history of Palestine at all if you think that the Israelis have any right whatsoever to be in Palestine, or that the Palestinians are terrorists. They are not terrorists. They're defending their own home against invaders. The only relevant borders are the borders designed by the United Nations in the form of the partition plan. Those are the only borders you need to concern yourself with. Those borders have been overrun by the Jews. After accepting the borders, the Jews then went over the borders and began to assassinate the Palestinians. The Palestinians are acting in self-defense. The American media portrays these men who are, and women, and young teenagers, actually, who are defending their homes as terrorists, but they are not terrorists. They're in their own home. They've been invaded by Israeli terrorists who do use torture as part of their statecraft, and they're doing the best they can with sticks and stones to drive these barbarian invaders out. It's the Arabians who have the right to the land. That is Arabia, not Israel. It's always been Arabia. Israel, the Jews, kept crying and moaning about these gas chambers that never existed, and so we created Israel out of whole cloth. We just made it up. It's true that the Palestinians had lived there when the Ottomans owned it, but if you know your history, and you do know your history, if you saw the movie Lawrence of Arabia, Lawrence of Arabia taught you that Arabia controlled Arabia, but except for the Turks who had taken over Arabia. And Lawrence of Arabia taught the Arabians how to fight for their own country, only to then betray them and hand it over to Britain. That whole area belongs to the Arabs. That's why we call it Arabia. Then, after the Lawrence of Arabia was tricked by the British and it got in the hands of the English, who were controlled by Jews, they gave a little slice of it to the Jews on the condition that the Jews would not mess around with the Arabians who were living there and had always lived there for thousands of years. The Jews then slaughtered and terrorized and murdered and raped 700,000 Palestinians or Arabians who were living in the Israeli side of the partition plan and made them into refugees. They were not supposed to be refugees. They were supposed to be allowed to live in their own home where they'd lived for thousands of years on what was then designated to be Israel. Yes, Israel was supposed to allow Jews to live there, but the Jews were never supposed to expel the Arabians. But that's what they did, using torture, terrorism, force, rape, and murder. They forced 700,000 Palestinians to leave the Israeli side of the partition plan and then commenced to steal the rest of the partition plan, and they're now at the very farthest edge of what's left for the Palestinians, and they're stealing that in front of your face on television. And when these poor Palestinians fight back with these homemade bombs that they strap on their own bodies to defend the very last remnant of their own home, their own nation, their own state that they've owned for thousands of years, the Jew media says that they are terrorists. And I challenge you, who are you going to believe? The Jews or your lying eyes? You see that they're being invaded. You see that the Jews are bulldozing down their homes and building up high-rises and moving in Jews from all over the world. And you see that these adolescents are doing nothing but defending their homes, their families, their country by sacrificing their own lives. Do you really think terrorist is the right word for that? Or do you think maybe these people are heroes? In my book, these young people are heroes. And anybody who invades another man's country should be bombed, because that's what you do when your country's invaded. And that's what we need to do when our country is invaded. Not go across and bomb Iraq so that Israel can enjoy a greater portion of the Middle East, but stay home and defend our own borders and knock the daylights out of any criminal invader who comes over our borders and says, "I am claiming America for myself, even though it doesn't belong to me, just because I can." You tell me, who's the terrorist and who's the hero? The most important thing to keep in mind is that Israel is the aggressor. Israel likes to wrap itself up in this robe of beatific, saint-like humanitarianism. And that is a false image. Israel is no humanitarian. Israel uses torture as part of its statecraft. That puts it in the class of a subhuman state, because human means no torture. Human means no cannibalism. If you are a cannibal, you are not human. You are more of a Neanderthal than a Homo sapien. Likewise, if you use torture as part of your statecraft, you have not yet achieved human status. You are still a semi-animal. And Israel uses torture all the time. Hitler did not use torture. You believe Hitler used torture because after the Second World War, the Jewish Bolsheviks / communists won the war and wrote the history, and they kept from you the vitally important fact that the communists in Russia, who were Jewish, 90% Jewish, assassinated and murdered 65 million white Christians. That's 10 times more than you've been taught Hitler murdered, when in fact he did not murder them at all. Now, I'm not trying to get you to focus on Hitler, because I know you can't. I know that Hitler has been so demonized that no one can ever convince you that Hitler is not Satan. But I do believe I can get you to move your focus over to Russia and take note of the fact that 65 million white Christians were killed and you weren't told. Now do you believe that maybe you've been brainwashed? Because don't you think you would be interested to know that 65 million white Christians were killed in a genocidal revolution that you thought you knew about? Now, who did this lying to you? Who told you these lies? The Jews. The Jews, the Jewish / communists, rewrote history, kept from you that they had murdered 65 million white Christians, have as their plank, the communist plank, to exterminate the white race, not the Jewish race. Nobody has ever tried to exterminate that little group of monkeys. Nobody gives a damn. Really, Hitler never tried to exterminate them. He just wanted them, get out of Germany with your communist regimes, because I see that you killed 65 million white Christians in Russia, and you're not going to come into Germany and do it here. And they said, yes, we are. And he put them in concentration camps, just like we put the Japanese in when they declared war on us. Remember, we, the Allies, declared war on Hitler. Hitler didn't declare war on them. And you know why? Do you know why Hitler was attacked? Because he did a deal with Russia to cut Poland in half. He was trying to extend Germany's boundaries to what they had been before, so that the white race could have its homeland, like the Asian, the yellow race has, like the black race has. And he did a deal with Russia. He said, okay, you can have half of Poland, and I'll take the other half. And that's what was supposed to happen. So Hitler took his half of Poland, and then Russia took Poland's half of Poland. And who do you think got attacked? The Allies attacked Hitler. The French and German, the French and the English attacked Hitler. They didn't care if communist Russia took their half of Poland. They just didn't like what Hitler was doing. And it had nothing to do with his so-called racism. Hitler was not, as you consider him to be, he did not use torture as part of his statecraft. There were no gas chambers. There were no hideous experiments. That's all propaganda. The only people that do that stuff are the subhuman races. In Africa, they practice those black arts. In Arabia, they practice those black arts. And don't you doubt me for a second that the Jews are right in there with the Arabians. Because guess what, folks? The Jews are a Semitic race, and so are the Arabians. They have the same genetic heritage. They share DNA. They are the same people, and they exhibit the same racial qualities, subhuman qualities, using torture and extermination and genocide and probably cannibalism. I know one thing about those Arabs. Both the Jews and the Arabs sacrifice animals to their demonic, satanic gods. So let's just don't be so ready to think of the Jews as being these saint-like messianic victims. Far from it. They are the ones, in fact, who killed Christ. They are not the Christ figures. They are the Antichrist. How can you call it murder when the Palestinians are defending their own home? Don't you know there's such a thing called self-defense and defense of property, which is an absolute defense against a charge of murder? If somebody comes into your home and burglarizes your home and you take a shotgun from the mantle and shoot them, you are not guilty of murder. And that's what the Palestinians are doing. And it's not because their parents are making them do it either. These young martyrs are teenagers in the full flower of their most passionate youth. Did you know that the human brain is at its most efficient at the age of 16 and that it's downhill all the way from there? These kids are looking at life by themselves without their parents' assistance, and they're saying, my homes, my parents' homes are being taken away from them. And if I don't defend my parents' homes, my people, my own people are going to be exterminated. I'm going to fight. I'm going to strap a bomb on my little 17-year-old, brave, foolish, honorable person, and I'm going to put a stop to this to the very best of my ability. This is not the behavior of a subhuman. This is not the same as human torture, which the Israelis practice. This is not the same as cannibalism, which the black Africans practice. This is heroism. And anybody who doesn't know the difference between giving your life for your country and eating your fellow human being or torturing your fellow human being, I put them in the same class as the cannibals and the torturers. These young, passionate heroes are definitely human. They prove it by their action. They're defending their home, their home state, which has been invaded by a murdering, terroristic, powerful enemy with atomic bombs. And they're fighting with sticks and stones, and they will be honored as wonderful human beings in the annals of history. It's only because we're living under a warped, perverted world system where the media is controlled by Jewish communists that we could for 1 second perceive these heroic youth as terrorists, because it's just pure propaganda. Well, there's a good argument for why everybody should turn Muslim, although I'm certainly not going to give up Christianity. It's because they're the next step. They perceive Jesus the way Jesus perceived himself. Not as the Son of God, but the Son of Man. Jesus said he was not any special guy, in fact, more than once. At one point they wanted to crown him and make him the king, and he said, "Why callest thou me good? There is none good save God." In other words, I'm no different from you guys. I'm one of you. And that's what the Muslims say. The Muslims say that Jesus was a prophet, like many other prophets, but that there is only one God, and that God is God. And that's what Jesus said. Why callest thou me good? There is one God. There is, how does that go? Why callest thou me good? There is none good save God. In other words, only God is God. And that's what the Muslims say. Now, that's not what the extremists say. The extremists are wrong. The extremists are relating back to the first five books of the Bible, which is the Quran, which also happens to be the Torah. All three great religions, the Islam, the Muslims, the Christians, and the Jews, all use these same five books. And these five books are full of wisdom, but they're also full of hate and war and all this primitive stuff that dates back a million years. And Jesus taught us, you don't do that stuff. And moderate Muslims teach us, you don't do that stuff. But the Jews are still clinging to those ancient practices, and so are the extremist Muslims. These are the two groups of people that have to get their lights put out. These primitive, barbaric, subhuman, prehuman beasts that are clinging to these ancient religious laws that tell them to go out and kill each other. The moderate Muslims don't believe that. They believe exactly what the Christians believe and what the few enlightened Jews believe, which is that God is love and that we need to live a better life than we did when we were animals slugging through the mud like a bunch of apes and cannibals. It is not blasphemous to say that Jesus said, "Why callest thou me good? There is none good save God," because that's in the book according to St. John, who was his best friend. Jesus did not set himself up to be a god. He refused to be crowned as a king. The evil, wicked perpetrator of that lying Christian philosophy that you have to accept this strange dogma is St. Paul, who came back after Jesus, never met Jesus, and was the worst persecutor of Christians, hired by the Romans to throw Christians to the lions. He was the biggest and baddest, most evil of the persecutors of the Christians. And when he found that he could not persecute them, he only invigorated them and firmed up their resolve. He then went about persecuting them in another manner. He managed to organize them and name himself as their first pope, and he told them what to think. And he taught them that they should go around and torture people who didn't accept Jesus Christ as their Savior. Jesus would never have condoned that activity. And when the Muslims came back 400 years later and Mohammed said, "This isn't right. You're not supposed to be killing people in order to save their souls. That's just as barbaric as what you had before. That's what the Romans were doing." That's why Jesus got up and started talking against the Jews, actually. The Romans were in control of the Jews, but it was the Jews who actually controlled the area of Israel, and they were a ruthless, oppressive, disgusting lot. And they cooperated with the Romans to torture anybody that went against their system, namely Jesus Christ, who got up and dared to say, "God is love. Throw away these stupid rules that don't reflect a God of love. Stop sacrificing your children, for starters. In fact, you're not even supposed to sacrifice animals. God is not pleased to hear the shrieks and cries of an animal being slaughtered on an altar. That's not who God is. And what about all this stoning women to death because they look funny at a guy? That's not right. Get rid of this barbarism." That's what Jesus said. Well, the Jews weren't going to allow that, so they conspired to torture Jesus to death, just like they did anybody else who didn't go along with them, just like they're doing today. The Muslims came 400 years old later, and they basically revised Christianity and did it the way Jesus wanted it done. Not, I'm not talking about the going out and killing in the Crusades. Of course, that's nuts. But the idea of God being love, and the idea that you shouldn't be healing people by putting strange things in their blood, and I mean the medical practices of the Christians were completely crazy back then, and the Arabians straightened that one right away. The Arabs, the Muslims, had their head together much better than the Christians did in 400 AD, because the Christians had fallen under the influence of that barbarian Roman, St. Paul, who was a torturer and a mass murderer, and as I said, when he couldn't control them any other way, he got himself named Pope and he controlled them that way. And we know the history of the Christian church and all of the torture and the crusades and the murders and the murders and the murders and the murders that have been done in the name of Jesus Christ. But I promise you, that is not Christianity. And anybody who promotes that as an idea and says you're not saved unless you believe that God is that Christ is God, in spite of the fact he said he wasn't, and that you are already forgiven for all of your sins just because you tell this lie, doesn't understand anything. Jesus saved us by showing us how to live our lives according to the will of God in a loving manner. That's who Jesus was. Anybody who tells you any different is an apostate and a heretic and not a friend of Jesus, and he made that clear too. He said, "Mess around with me and I will disavow you as my friend." And don't you worry, he will. You go around telling people they're forgiven for their sins ahead of time and that they can go around and rape and murder and torture people, I promise you, Jesus will not take you as his friend, because he stands for exactly the opposite. Ever since the automobile was invented, oil became important in the Middle East, and the international bankers decided to set up a world communist government. The problem we're facing in America is that America is being taken over by that world communist government right now, but we're not allowed to say it because I don't know why. It's just that they've successfully brainwashed us into thinking the silliest thing you can worry about is communism. Isn't that right? My mention of the word makes you want to laugh at me as being archaic and outdated. But the truth is, communism is the threat we're facing. There is a world communist party that wants to turn the entire globe into a totalitarian slave state, and the descendants of America's founding fathers are the main obstacle toward putting this plan in place, because those people are the ones who understand that in order to be fully human, you have to be able to talk in order to think. Remember that a slave is not allowed to speak his mind. That's one of the biggest differences between a slave and a free man. So we are now being taught what we can't say, starting with criticizing communism. It's not punishable, it's just laughable. Control of the Middle East is one of the main things that this worldwide government wants to do, because that's where the oil is, and oil became extremely important with the invention of the automobile. The whole world now runs on oil. We're a mechanized world. So, what we have to worry about is having our country become part of this worldwide communist, or if you prefer, totalitarian government that makes slaves of it all, of us all. Let's look at the Russian Revolution, which is where the human rights got lost. It wasn't Nazi Germany, it wasn't Hitler's Gestapo that went into your house and bugged your house and knocked your door down if you said anything bad against Hitler. That's a misrepresentation of history. The truth is, it was the communists who did that stuff. It's the communists who bugged everybody's houses so that if husband and wife wanted to talk to each other, they had to turn on the shower and whisper. It's communists that would pull you off the street and diagnose you as insane, haul you off to the hospitals and give you lobotomies, shock treatments, or alternatively send you to Siberia so you would die of overwork in the freezing cold. Communist Russia is the biggest example of a takeover of communists over good people, and they murdered 65 million resident Russians in order to implement their totalitarian plan. That's almost twice as many as the communists in China murdered, which was 35 million in order to implement Chinese communism. Don't ever forget that after we left Vietnam, millions were murdered by, I think his name is Pol Pot, in order to implement communism in Cambodia. Communism is the most brutal possible government that this planet has ever seen, and it's something everyone needs to worry about. So when you're seeing our rights being taken away from us in the form of this Homeland Security Patriot Act, you're seeing a preparation for communism to take over this country, which is just one piece in the puzzle of the world domination that they're planning. Naturally, in order to destabilize America so that communism can take over, they will encourage crime. That's very destabilizing, and it's intentional that our criminals are taking over the streets and destroying our culture, along with drugs and any attack on the nuclear family and on religion. So the Patriot Act needs to be seen as only a piece in the puzzle of a long-standing, at least 100 years, the worldwide bankers have been implementing and planning this plan to create out of the world a world government in which everyone becomes a slave in a totalitarian communist government. That's all for tonight, folks. Thanks for listening. See you next week, same time, same station, with another edition of The Hola Hoax.